Welcome to NFL Total Access, the locker room. I'm Michael Robinson alongside Mike Jeezy Garofolo. Jeezy, what's happening?
Doing great, man. Thanksgiving week, but you know, we're still giving you our content here, and it's a good one today, Mike Rob.
It's a great one. I'm still traveling. So yeah, it is Thanksgiving. I'm still traveling. It's all good. But we do have a great show today. Today we have a man who's played in more NFL games than any other human who has played in this game. 382 games. He's a Hall of Fame class of 2017, a place kicker, the great Dane Morton Anderson. And you guys aren't going to be. First of all, he is hilarious, okay? Mm-hmm. One of the most funniest people that we've had on the podcast. And yeah, he can sing. You don't want to miss it. He can sing, yes.
Yes, that's the highlight. There's also another highlight that he made us promise not to make the headline here.
Oh,
so I won't make the
it.
Headline, but you can hear it. You'll hear the story. It's early on, and then he at the end, he makes his promise not to make. So I won't make that the headline. I will say, you know, a lot of people look at kickers and say, oh, my goodness, nerve-wracking. How could you do that? How could you go out there with the game on the – his mentality is the opposite of that, and I think that that applies to football and life in general. Just soak it up because – Mike Rob certainly did.
Absolutely. Jeezy, we got a good one today. All right. One of the best kickers, I don't know, that I've ever spoken to in my life. All right. Morton Anderson, welcome to the show, big dog.
It's great to be here, guys. Happy Thanksgiving soon.
Yeah, man. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Now, before we get into the interview, we start every podcast with a locker room story. Now, again, not one of those, you know, PG locker room stories that we tell on TV. We peel the layers back a little bit and we get into it on the Total Access podcast. So now is your opportunity to bless us with a locker room story.
Gee, where do I go? I mean, 25 years, a plethora of opportunities to share some moments here. We had an offensive lineman. He was his pregame routine was he had to throw up, had to go throw up. I mean, he was okay. Literally so pregame, you know, coach talks. He does his thing. He goes to the stall, and you can hear him in there. You know, and everybody's like, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 we're ready. He's ready. We're ready, you know. Then one game, he didn't go. So we started talking to him. We started talking shit to him. I mean, we wanted him to throw up so bad. Man, I can't throw up, man. I'm cool. I'm good. And we're like, get your ass in the bathroom, man. Get you in the stall.
Yeah.
And we started talking, you know, guys were farting on him, blowing fart, you know. And finally he was like, and we're like, yeah, we're good, man, we're good. So, I mean, that was one. We had another guy, Benny Ricardo. He was a kicker. Before I got to the Saints, Benny Ricardo was their kicker. And the Saints weren't very good back then. I don't know if you remember, but they used to have the bags over their heads, the Aints.
Absolutely.
So Saints were losing badly. This was the year before I got drafted by the Saints, and this was probably the tip of the iceberg for Bum Phillips. Halftime, they're down like 28-0. Bum's doing his halftime speech. All of a sudden, everybody can hear like the showers running. And like, what the heck? What's going on? Benny's in there taking a shower. At halftime. Game's over, you know. He's not going to play, man. So that was the end of Benny Ricardo. That was a wrap for Benny Ricardo, man.
Hey, Morton, you know what's crazy? Hey. I knew guys that would take showers like before the game or try to get it in before, like during halftime. They said it reset their bodies to making them think that, you know, I don't know.
Benny Ricardo's career, it ended. I think he's like on television now doing NFL games, you know? Like, I don't know. That was the end of Benny.
You know, Beast Mode used to throw up before every game too. You know, he was a teammate of mine in Seattle. And it wasn't that he was just like grossed out or nervous. He actually stuck his finger down his throat.
Who am I right now?
Yeah. Beast mode.
Beast mode's on the Manning cast.
On the Manning cast.
Bringing the Henny. He was awesome.
He had five shots of Hennessy before our playoff game against the Chicago Bears in the divisional round. Five of them. Yes, five.
I believe it.
Dude was amazing. Did.
I played drunk one time in a preseason game. That was it.
Whoa. Get the hell out of here. No, whoa. You got to talk about that.
What?
You were drunk? Please go into that.
It was an experiment. It was a science experience. It was literally a scientific experience, but I don't think I've ever shared this story.
We love exclusives.
Yes.
I don't think I've actually told, I might've told this story in my book or something, but it was literally like, all right, it's a preseason game, right?
Yeah.
So it matters, but it doesn't count.
Exactly.
Know? And night before, there was some remnants maybe in the bloodstream, and then I just kind of topped it off with a couple of shots. And then I don't recommend it, man. I was seeing, what goalpost do I pick here? Do I go with the middle one, the left one, the right one?
So you was drunk. You weren't just a little tipsy. You were drunk.
Yeah. I was definitely feeling okay. And then the hangover started in the second half, right? Because people, you smell, you know, and then Gatorade and the water. And then I started getting sober. And then next thing I know, man, it's headache time.
was this way back in your career?
Oh, yeah. This was 83, 84 preseason.
What? I was born in 83. I was born in 83.
My first year was 82, man. Archie Manning was my teammate. They shipped him off to Houston in 82. And we got Earl Campbell. Goodness. I know. I date myself.
No, it's all good, man.
I wouldn't say I was a full-blown Bourbon Street drunk, but I was definitely, tipsy there. So, but we digress. This is turning into a podcast.
This is awesome.
Maybe we bring a rehab person in here and start talking me off the ledge, man.
All right. Let's go with some of the scripted questions that we have.
We're out of time. That was fun, guys.
Yeah.
All right. See you later.
Yes. Let's talk about
those are the best stories. Let's face it.
That's why we didn't stop you. We let you go. All right. Well, let's talk about your childhood now. It feels like therapy.
Well,
right?
I was an orphan. No, that's not true.
Well, you were born in Copenhagen, spent most of your youth growing up in Denmark, moved to America as a teenager.
Yeah.
What had your experience of American football been before that? What was your introduction to the game?
Yeah, I didn't have any. I was soccer, handball, gymnastics. I didn't know really? Football. Football in the 70s was not a household sport in Denmark. Now it has become more mainstream. I would say it's still a cult sport over there. The interesting thing about football in Europe is that if you go to a game in Tottenham or Wembley, we got a couple international games. If you go to any of those games, you'll see all the jerseys, not just the two teams playing. Mm-hmm. You'll see 32 different jerseys by all the 70,000 fans, which I think is cool. I mean, it's like it's a community of that people are just fans of the game of the NFL. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up not knowing the sport. And when I came here as an exchange student, I wanted to play soccer. They didn't have a soccer team in high school, and they needed a kicker. And I literally walked on. Didn't want to wear the pads or the helmet. They told me, you got to wear this. I said, what, why? And then it became painfully obvious to me why I had to wear this stuff, when the big guy showed up, and they wanted to have a piece of me there. So It was trial by fire. I mean, I learned it very quickly. I had a talent for hitting a ball, with the foot, and I put the work in, guys, and I wanted to be the best, and I see this guy, Justin Tucker from Baltimore now, and he's the best, right? He's the best because he wants to be the best. So I spend a lot of time just perfecting that craft, and then you got to be in the right place, right time. Yeah. Mentors, guys that tee it up for you, a good head coach that says, hey, we got this foreign guy. He can boot the ball. and you get a chance to go to college. And that's what I did at Michigan State. Michigan State for 4 years. Spartans.
Who was the early mentor for you? You mentioned some mentors, well, some people that kind of helped you along.
So Bob Wilbur was my head coach. He was tremendous. He teed it up. And then when I got to Michigan State, Hans Nielsen was a Danish kicker. And also Kirk Gibson. You remember Kirk from the Dodgers and the Tigers. And he was a teammate of mine that brought it every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was interesting to me was I wasn't treated as a specialist. You know, there's this notion that kickers are outsiders looking in, not part of the team, not part of, you know, the everyday. Yeah. It's true. We don't put our hands in the dirt. You know, we're not every down guys, but we're an integral part. We're the producers, if you will. I mean, if the object is to score more points than the other team, I'd say we're pretty important.
Yeah, very.
You look at the leading scorers on any roster, you're going to find a little dude who can kick the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and we're depending on other guys, just like you are. If you're a defensive back, you know, if you're a cornerback, do I know I have the safety? Do I have safety help? You know, well, you know, things like that.
Well,
that was my only analogy that I actually knew.
My hunch is, you know, you were accepted as one of the guys because you were good, right? I mean, if you're not good, they say, well, hey, that's the guy that's supposed to go out there,
right,
and go out there for one play and do his job. I mean, you know,
right.
In a lot of folks' mind, you don't make it. Hey, that's what you're supposed to do, you know?
Well, I think the greatest ammo is, hey, are you doing your thing? You know, are you letting the team down, or you're not letting the team down? Are you producing? Are you helping us win, or are you going the other way? Are we losing because of you? And no matter what the position, you get found out really fast in the NFL at the highest level. It's back to my cornerback. He's pretty much on an island there. And you go man to man with the best receiver out there, and you either take care of business or you get exposed. And the same with the kicker, right? I mean, it's the same. You got, 1.2 seconds of terror out there for a lot of people that are watching going, this doesn't look comfortable. This looks like a highly stressful situation, right? And if you haven't rehearsed it, if you haven't earned the right to be in that situation, then, man, it can look really bad.
What was it? Was it a culture shock for you? Like when you first came over, like being a part of the American football team, was it some sort of a culture shock, or is it like, you know, a team is a team no matter the sport?
Yeah, the team. I definitely always felt part of the team. I knew what I had to do. I knew, you know, in high school, you don't kick a lot of field goals. Let's face it. We kicked a lot of extra points. We were pretty damn good. We were 11-1 and made it all the way to semi-state. So we were a good team. Wow. We scored a lot of touchdowns. So I kicked off a lot. And in high school, you kick the ball in the end zone, it's an automatic touchback. No run. There's no run backs. So we pretty much kicked the ball in the end zone the whole year. I might have had 5 field goals. But based on that body of work and being on a really good football team, I really felt I was accepted. I'll tell you this, as a guy who didn't speak the language, who was an immigrant, who came over, was supposed to stay for 10 months, I couldn't have landed in a better place than Ben Davis High School and those Ben Davis Giants, and being integrated into the school, the family I stayed with, and the friends I made through sports. Football taught me so much, you know, that just the sacrifice of self and being part of something bigger than yourself, I think, was one of the biggest things. Just being part of something that was unique, man, you just felt it. And I don't remember back to high school, you're sitting on that yellow school bus and the cheerleaders are up front and you're back there and you're sitting in your unis.
Yeah.
And you're traveling to Friday Night Lights, you know? That's some awesome. Of my best memories, you know, with those guys. Yeah. And I know my uniform's clean. It's probably not going to see a speck of dirt unless I trip and fall, right? But I know that at some point I'm going to be in that game and I'm going to play a role. It may not be a big, but in a playoff, I did have a 3-pointer that made the difference. And so you just never know when the moments come. It's that anticipation and excitement, you know, that drives it for me.
Jeezy, see, that's why this guy was great, man. I mean, look at it, man. Look how serious he is about his craft. Like, I play with seriously though. I play with kickers that really they don't. I mean, you know, they act like they're really outsiders. They don't really want to be a part of the team, and you know, they don't want the responsibility of everything falling on their shoulders as well. So, you know, talk like that. You know, it's awesome, man.
Thanks. I appreciate you saying that. You know, I spent most of my time, like on game day, I would go to the stadium 3 hours early. And who are the first ones in the locker room? Offensive linemen.
Yeah.
They're the first ones to get there. Yeah. Those are the most important guys for me because their big asses are up in front protecting my little ass. You see what I'm saying? So I got to have those guys happy. So I'm talking whatever it takes, dinners, you know, whatever it takes, man, to make those boys happy during the week.
You get the hell out of here, Morton. You did not take any offensive linemen out for no damn dinners. God. Get the hell out of here, man.
God. They invited me in. I was part of that.
Really?
On Thursday, we'd go out and have beers.
You was part of the Thursday night crew. Get the hell out of here.
Of course was.
That's
Stan
dope.
Rock, John Tice, Hobie Brenner, all the boys back in New Orleans, man, they were like, all right, Morton, let's roll. And the punter actually came, too.
Punters usually don't hang.
Because we had all the good spots, you know, the boys.
Nice.
So it was fun. You know, it was a blast, man. But those guys are real. And if you ever talk to an offensive lineman, they actually get fined. You guys know this, that offensive linemen have a fine bucket that if you talk to the media as an offensive lineman, you get fined.
Yep, or get mentioned in the press big time. Oh, man.
No, you better not get mentioned in the newspaper, or better not be on some news clip. You better be stealth and under the radar. And that's what I loved about the O-line, right?
They took care of
business on Sunday. They were there early. They didn't talk. You know, they just were. And they were tight-knit. They didn't let anybody in. It was tough, man.
Yeah,
a couple of game winners took care of that. You know,
yeah.
like the 1998 season, 99 January overtime
17th in the Metrodome. Yeah,
your overtime a field goal to win the game to send you guys to the Super Bowl on a day where Gary Anderson, I assume a buddy of yours, you guys were around for a number of years. He was a South Africa guy too, right? I mean, he came.
Syracuse University, and our careers kind of follow, you know, paralleled, if you will. Mm-hmm. He had a great career. Should be in the Hall of Fame. Better be in the Hall of Fame.
And he hadn't missed it all that year.
He was 35 for 35, and we were just very fortunate that he just pulled it a little bit. I mean, talking about a foot, and thank God for us because we were the underdogs. It's hard to believe when you're 14-2 and you got to go on the road that you're an underdog, but we were against that team. It was Randy Moss's rookie year.
Yeah.
And they had a great offense, Randall Cunningham, and that defense with John Randall. Gotta love John Randall. Come on, man.
Dude, he is. He's
with the
people,
mask,
man.
With the mask, man.
Yeah, oh, that man, that's so dope.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember, you know, the highs of you hitting the game-winning field goal and then, you know, knowing what he was feeling? Having missed for the first time at the just worst possible moment that year.
I would think my emotions were better than his, right? I mean, it had to be a pretty a world of suck for him, and I felt for him, man, because I've been there, not in a moment like that, but I've been in situations where you lose the game, you know, and it does happen. I felt bad for him. I had a pretty good feeling when we were driving in overtime. You felt a momentum shift. And like when I took the field, I knew we were going to the Super Bowl. I just didn't tell anybody, you know, because that thing was wheelhouse all day, 38 left hash. Come on. I mean, that's.
Look at that.
Are you nervous? I mean, are you nervous at all in that moment?
You can't ice.
Oh, I'm using that, Morton. Can I please use that, please? You can't ice. What the hell? That's what the hell I'm talking about. You can't ice. Yeah, hell yeah. Shit, yeah, man.
I'm kidding a little bit now. I'm blushing because there's a reason for why I say that, and it sounds arrogant. I know that. But the night before, I've done a lot of mental rehearsals. I spend a lot of time doing that. And you can believe it or not, but my sports psychologist I've been working on with for many, many years, John Silver, we had created a program that worked for me, all right? And in its simplicity, it simply talks about the two things that as elite athletes we control, our effort, our attitude, and everything else is white noise. So why spend time on it? So let's spend time on the workbench. Let's spend time on making our positive behavior dominant. And let's rehearse that in real time, in slow motion, third person. And when you get really good at it, like a video game, you can do it in first person, like you have the goggles on and you're going.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, you push the button. You know, when you go in
I know what you're talking about.
And you push the button and you're above it, but you're looking at yourself driving. Then you push another button and you're in the car looking out the front window. And then you push the third button and you're in the eyes. And you're literally through yourself that way. When you get good at mental rehearsals, you're there, first person. And when you can drive an image, a scenario in real time in slow motion, man, now you got something. And when I stood on that sideline on Sunday and all my brothers are sitting there holding hands, I realized they weren't driving the car. I was driving the car.
Yeah.
And like I said, I knew we were going to win. I just didn't tell them. And I knew that Coach Green was he was going to call a timeout, which he did. Just gave me more time to get my target line. Fine. Thank you so much. Thanks for calling a timeout. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the help. I appreciate that.
It delayed the inevitable.
Look at the perspective, Jeezy. You see it? Yeah. Some people take the scary way out, and it's fear, right? And it's like, oh, my God, he called. You know, he's trying to ice me. Oh, I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it. Then there's the other side of it. It's like, well, shit, give me a little bit more opportunity to line this damn thing up because now I know I'm going to hit it. Just the perspective of it. Like, so that's the good side of it. Now, you've been on the
– Trust your hopes, not your fears. Trust your hopes.
Trust your hopes, not your fears. I'm going to use that again. I'm writing that down. I'm writing it down. I got it. I got it recorded too. But look, Morton, like, that's the good side of it. You've been on the bad side of it too. How do you process missing the kick and then walking to the sideline? Because again, those same guys you went out drinking with on Thursday are there. The same relationships are there, right? How do you, I've always wondered for kickers, like, how do you look at me after? Like, how do you feel cool, like, looking at us after that? You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be difficult. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me start by saying that you have to love and embrace the world of suck. Love it. Love that world of suck. The NFL is the world of suck. Are you improving the most when your hands are above your head? Hell no.
No, no.
When your back is against the wall and you're down, that's failing is delicious. Give me some of that, but don't give me too much. Don't give me too much. But let me fail miserably so I can learn powerfully so that I never again have to repeat that feeling. Man, failing is so important to success. You've got to embrace failing. Embrace the distaste.
But I'm sure when you're on that airplane riding back after you just missed a kick and the team lost, and guys are looking at you like, dude, I don't give a shit about embracing no damn suck. We lost the damn game.
Yeah.
How do you process that?
You take personal responsibility initially. You say, that's on me. I effed it up. You know, that's on me, guys. Not going to happen again. You know, I had a 96. We're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars. We were 3-12. All right, we're not going anywhere. Jacksonville, if they win the game, they're in the playoffs for the first time in their franchise history.
It was week 17. Yeah.
And I had a 30-yarder chip shot. Muddy field. I slip. I push the ball left. Jacksonville wins. I'm laying on my back. And Robbie Tobeck, one of our offensive linemen, straddles me. And I'm thinking, oh, what a nice teammate. He's going to help me up. He points the finger and goes, you lost the game. You lost the freaking game. And he just stepped over me and left me laying there.
Wow.
So there is that feeling of this really sucks, right? But I owned up to it. You know, it was the last game. That was the worst part of it because I couldn't come next week and deliver the blow. You know, I was done for until the next year. But that was all right. Gave me a tremendous motivation. And Jacksonville invited me down to present the Player of the Year award in June at the Jaspers. Paid me a little scratch, free golf in Jacksonville.
And did you go? You
of
did it?
Of course I went. Wait. What an opportunity. Failure presents opportunities, guys.
Yes.
I mean, embrace the suck.
What player? Whose player? The Jaguars Player of the Year?
Yeah, it was Mark Brunell. He was Player of the Year. And I was the last presenter. I was a surprise presenter. We all had the tuxes on. It was in a 2,000-seat auditorium. And when I walked on the stage, I pretended to trip and fall, and everybody went wild. And I got a standing ovation. And then I went and played the stadium course at Sawgrass and stayed at a beautiful Marriott. I mean, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Hate the game, baby. Yes.
Well, the thing about that, they got into the playoffs, and then they went on a run. They beat Buffalo. They beat Denver. And they almost made the Super Bowl. So, you know.
Yeah, that was the, they did. They made it all the way to the AFC championship.
But let's go back. Did Robbie Toback, what was the next thing he said to you? When was the next thing he said? And what was it? That he? I can't imagine you left it like that with Robbie Toback forever.
I did leave it with him because I was just like incredulous. I was like, that was weird, but he must be in a bad spot. He must be in a bad place. You know,
I love it.
We're 3-13. All right.
Right. Yeah. We're not going anywhere.
A draft pick because of my miss. We got a better pick.
Opportunity.
Opportunity. Listen, it sucked at the time, but big picture, we moved up in the draft, maybe got a better player. I don't know what to say to Robbie Toback. Get over it, buddy. You know, you had 76 plays and you graded out at 85. Is that great? I don't know.
Nah, that's true.
So you and your Saints teammates, I'm jumping because we don't want to keep you too long here. Because this could go like 4 hours at this rate.
It could, yeah. Well, you sometimes, believe me.
You and Brian Hansen, your Saints punter teammate, you made a track called Take It to the Top.
Huh? Hold up. Y'all made a track like a song?
Yeah.
It was oversynthesized. He was oversynthesized.
Hit him with a couple of bars.
What? Y'all were rapping?
It's like a love embrace, and they go for it with a smile on their face because they know it's going to win a place at the top.
Oh!
We're going to make it. We're going to take it to the top. We're going to go there and be all the things that we want to be. There's nothing to it. We'll sail right through it to the top. We're gonna make it after all. Falls to the top. So there's the hook. No one falls to the top, right? But it took a while to get there. Yeah.
Well, first of all,
I wallpapered my wall. I got 10,000 copies. This is back when vinyl was cool. Vinyl's coming back, guys.
It is coming back.
Right now, I don't know what this website is, discogs.com. $20.
$20?
Yeah.
It's a deal. You got to find a record player to play a 45.
Look at this picture. Oh,
yeah,
man.
That is awesome. It's Flock of Seagulls, isn't it?
Oh. Where are we here? Here we go. There they are.
Oh, man. Those are the specialists right there, baby. Yes.
It's Flock of Seagulls, Duran Duran, Wham. I mean, think about it. It was the 80s. It was the mid-80s.
Yeah, man.
You got any more, Mike Rowe? Because I would.
No,
I know
I'm
we're,
good.
All right, I got
good,
one man. More question though, because we got to go back. You said you didn't want to wear the helmet and the pads when you first played football.
Yeah.
You had that little double bar face mask for probably your entire career. Was that your attempt to wear as little equipment as possible? And I don't think anybody. I don't think I've ever seen anybody else wear that same face mask.
Well, Gary had the one bar.
Yeah. Gary had one.
Vendetta
had
a one bar. Sean.
But you had the double.
Well, the key was to get good vision.
Right.
You don't think about the fist that can fit in there. You think about, I got to have good vision.
Right.
And then later, the fist onto the nose becomes a reality. But that's not You got to promise, though, I don't want the headline out of this pod to be Morton played drunk. That's not...
No. We wouldn't do you like that, Morton. No, it wouldn't happen.
I mean,
like
that should not be the... Yeah, I know how these things go and how everybody, you know, producer Tom's licking his chops going,
No, producer Tom is laughing because this was an awesome podcast, brother.
Thank you for stopping by, man. Producer Tom just chimed in on the private chat and said, LOL. So I don't know what that means. I mean, he's LOLing at the story.
Yeah, that can't go either way. Hey, Morton, thank you for stopping by. That'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access to Locker Room. For more insight with the Locker Room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.
Check me out. Great Dane Nation. Don't forget it.